That that song would be the perfect message to send for our last show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the War Report. And you should all know by now that this is our last broadcast of the War Report on public education. It's called Call to War, Teachers Becoming Leaders, the leaders that we need to win the war. And this is going to be a difficult show for me and for all of us. It's been 4 years, and as I have said over the last couple of shows, we've logged in well over 200, probably 225 hours of broadcasting in the last 4 years. We've touched on a range of topics, issues, some very emotional, some very critical, some calling for looking in the mirror and seeing who you are and what you're doing and not doing and what's happening and everything that you can imagine. We probably have touched on it in some way over the last 4 years. This show was, God, I don't know what to say. Basically, I don't want to end the show, but I think maybe the time has come. And in ending the show, I don't want anyone to think that I'm ending my work or Joe or Deb, our work in trying to save public education from the destruction that's been waged upon us in the form of a war. Not by any means whatsoever. As I have said, I think maybe it was 3 or 4 weeks ago, that I will still be working my 24/7 on issues pertaining to education, but more of in a larger format of what I'm tentatively calling the war on kids in America, and that maybe that's where I should have started 4 years ago. I made the decision not to do the show on that subject, but instead to do it on public education. Well, now I'm going to pivot to that area. And so I could go, as I said, I can go like totally off script, on script, and just let it rip. I'm doing now, so I'll stop that and say, oh, different song to open with. I selected that song maybe a couple of months ago, and hopefully we can get a link up to it so that you can link in and listen to the whole song. The song basically says, to this guy is speaking to his wife, girlfriend, or significant other, and he is saying that after, and the song says after 10 long years, if you don't know me by now, you never, never will. Given all the things that we've gone through, I know you, you know me, and thus there shouldn't be any misunderstanding, and on and on and on. And I picked that as like a theme for me for today. After 4 long years doing this every week, that you should know me and I should know you, and me leaving the war report or whatever I do going forward from here, you should know that it will be in the best interest of American kids, public education, larger humanity, the planet, as my efforts to make a contribution and helping bring about a better world in with what's left with my life, and which has been my lifetime quest here. So I figured that song, that if you listen to it, if you don't know it, if you listen to it, think about me and the war report, and it says a lot. Okay. I'm going to try and do a couple of things today. One, if you got our promotion, I'm going to talk just a little bit about the positive youth development school that I've been talking about for the last couple of shows. And I'm going to then talk about, I guess it's my version of what the late President Eisenhower did when he was leaving office, and what George Orwell did after World War II was over. They each gave a message to the world, and that there was a crisis coming, and they laid out the nature of the crisis. It was a warning, and it was a warning that says, if we make you aware of this, then hopefully you will do something to mitigate it. I'm going to try and do a little of that too. So let me start off by saying, when I was talking about the new urban research public high school, I talked about what it was that's built around this notion of positive youth development, and I compared it to a hospital where every person in the hospital, from top to bottom, everything that they do in theory is for the wellness, the welfare of each and every patient that comes in. You can call it the medical school model. You can call it the health science model. But what that model or those two models have in common is that every single person, every aspect of the hospital is dedicated to helping each patient to get on, stay on a wellness trajectory. The urban high school that I've been talking about is also based on that same type of notion, where everyone in the school, and not just a single school, I basically see this as a model that every school, pre-K to PhD, public, private, should have as its vision, is contributing individually and collectively, each teacher, the principal, office workers, you name it, contributing to the well-being, the positive development of each student that comes into their building. I'm calling for a transformation. Notice I didn't say reform. I'm saying a transformation. A transformation that is its purpose is to change from being a site where the purpose is to test, retest, prepare for tests, be intimidated by tests, being judged by tests, being prepared to come out of that institution, become a cog in a larger wheel that makes all of us participants, willingly or unwillingly, in our own destruction in terms of our freedom, our democracy, our futures, and that we need to move from that type of model, a model that is designed to socialize all of us, teachers, admins, students, to become purveyors of or to help perpetuate and maintain a social structure that basically seeks to enslave all of us in a different kind of slavery than we've had before, but a form of slavery nevertheless. The school that I would be promoting for people to consider and hopefully see the value of it and adopt it would be one that its culture that I mentioned last week would be the culture that is dedicated to the positive youth development that we talked about last week. In order to do so, we have to look at the curriculum. And if you remember that vision, I mentioned vision, what a vision is, and then vision gives rise to a mission, and the mission then gives rise to goals and strategies. And it's that part of the mission is to, well, the purpose of the mission is to bring into concrete existence the abstract form of the vision. Remember, the vision is something that we seek to become. We seek to materialize at some time in the future. A very important part of the mission, then, is based upon its concepts, its principles, and I like the word now, frameworks. Being a positive youth development school in itself is not enough. If you call that a framework, call that the central framework around which the school is built from scratch. That's not enough. We need additional frameworks to help bring the positive development vision to reality. And so I'm going to lay out in kind of like bullet form a list of frameworks. actually the list, because there's more than one framework I believe is necessary in order to accomplish the mission. The first framework has to be engagement. I've talked about this before. Engagement is a new buzzword in academia and elsewhere. Is getting everyone engaged, invested into what the purpose of the school is for multiple purposes. Engagement is the key. We talk about it in terms of students not being engaged, disengaged. We talk about having to get students re-engaged if that's the case. Engagement is a key framework that must be in and across the curriculum. It's how to get our students engaged, keep them engaged, and get our teachers engaged, committed, invested, and keep them there. So, an engagement framework. Also, a whole school, whole student framework. Remember, students, when they come into your school and your room, they bring with them what happened just before coming into your school, what happened last night, what happened last week, and all of those elements can impact the student in terms of his or her engagement, and the same goes for teachers. Also, I believe that these core frameworks must individually and collectively produce a synergistic impact in furthering efforts to have an outcome of the positive youth development. I believe a social justice framework has to be in the mix. A research or inquiry framework has to be part of the mix. Service learning has to be an integral part of the mix. I think I've mentioned what service learning is. It's different from community service, that many schools have programs where students have to do community service because colleges and universities look to see that the student has a broad range of experience beyond individual courses or a curriculum, and community service is looked at very favorably. I'm not talking about community service. Service learning begins at your school, at the university, whereby you take a course or courses that prepares you, the student, and also the teacher, to develop a curriculum. That's the academic part that prepares you then to go out to the community and get engaged, usually through a nonprofit organization or a governmental organization, to work on a major problem or issue or issues that is part of that community's experience, so that you connect the academic with the practical, the experiential part. The academic and the hands-on experience, what Dewey talked about in terms of experiential learning, is the best form of learning. Then that leads me to experiential learning as part of the pedagogy, and also answering a question that someone presented after last week's show. Data. Data-driven part of the curriculum. No, I do not believe in data collection, data-driven, and sharing that data with other agencies and individuals, enterprise. No. Data and technology and this vision minimize and are only there to aid in student learning how to acquire knowledge via research. I want to make that point clear, because when I talked about the emotional, social-emotional learning, that's a definite framework here, but it's not that framework that will collect data and for a price, for any price, shared with outside agencies or enterprises. Okay. I could go on, and I'm going to sort of like wrap this up very quickly now. Critical participatory action research. I believe that students, especially in the high school, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade, just like we have STEM schools where the major focus of the school is technology, electronics, etc. I believe that having as your part of your curriculum, part of your core principle is science, inquiry, critical inquiry, learning how to get to the truth, teaching students to have what I call a fidelity to inquiry, fidelity to the truth, and fidelity to social justice, and fidelity to being engaged citizens in a pluralistic democracy. And to be able to do that, I believe the best path is students learning how to become scientists, how to have a solid background in the scientific method as a way to get to the truth, truth about themselves, truth about society, the world that they live in, that these are principles that together or individually and collectively, they should get the job done in terms of the positive, contributing to the positive development of the nation's youth. That old saying that the sum is greater than its individual parts. Each of the core principles that I listed, and there are more, should make a contribution to the positive development of each student. But when you put them all together and you have them in your curriculum, part of your pedagogy, there should be a synergistic effect, making them stronger and contributing more as a collective set of principles. Okay, I'm rushing, folks, so let me get out of that to move to the second part of the show. And I sort of mentioned it already. For 4 years, we've talked about here the neoliberal, the corporate state, and it's Machiavellian agenda. And we've done so in an effort to, one, make everyone aware, or as many people as possible aware, and to understand. And when those two come together, have an emotional engagement with what you have learned, be it you pissed off, or you're saying, this is exactly what I want to see happen, and that awareness, that understanding, that emotional engagement will lead you as an individual or you as part of a collective to engage in positive social action as it relates to the crises that you're facing. Now, I also want you to remember back when I talked about Eisenhower, General Dwight D. Eisenhower, President of the United States during the 50s. And when he left office, 3 days before he left office, he gave what now has become a very famous speech. And in that speech, he talked about the growing relationship between the military and industry. And he used the term the military-industrial complex. Later, and I mentioned this a little, I think, the last show and several shows back, later, another element was added, and that was congressional. So it became the military-industrial congressional complex. And what he was saying was, after World War II, there was this concerted effort for these components to come together in a relationship that he felt would be dangerous for democracy. Hopefully you know what I'm talking about. I will add that pretty much everything that he said in his speech has come to pass. It was a warning that he gave us, and a warning that we did not heed. George Orwell, whom I've talked about a lot, in his book, 1984, and I told you his story. During World War II, he was an analyst, intelligence analyst, set on what is called the Russian death, and he saw how Russia had come to the state that it was in, and how China was going in the same direction. Okay. And he saw these two nations merging as giants after the war. And he came up with this idea that the free world, because he considered communism to be the biggest threat to the free world needed to be made aware of and understand what communism would be like if the world was dominated by the communist ideology and practices. And he wanted to have people to become aware that this is something that could happen in your lifetime, not 100 years from now, not 50 years from now, but your lifetime right here, right now. And so he wrote 1984. It was a warning. It was a message. And here we are, according to what's going on in the world now. Neoliberalism, if he had substituted the fear of communism to the fear of neoliberalism, which is the political economy with the politics driving the economy and the awesome power that those two social institutions have when they're combined, the old notion of the whole is greater than the sum of its parts that I just mentioned, it was all there in what he was trying to give us a warning about. Both of these gentlemen and their messages have come to fruition, or one is in the process of coming to fruition. We didn't listen. We didn't do anything. I see what is happening to public education now, today, almost the same way that both Eisenhower and Orwell saw what was coming and what was going to happen to society, to the world, 50, 60 years ago or more. And I look at it as neoliberalism and its Machiavellian agenda, or the corporate state and its Machiavellian agenda that we've talked about for 4 years. Is the crisis the threat that is dangerous to all of us, individually, collectively? And I also look at it as what, remember the book, A Nation at Risk? I really look at what's happening today as we as a nation, civilization worldwide, are being threatened to such an extent that it could put all of humanity and the planet at risk. And I tie it to education this way, that saving public education, the future of public education, is the future of our nation. Let me say that again. Our efforts to try and save public education from the neoliberal Machiavellian agenda is tied to saving humanity and the planet. That's big. And some of you may think, I'm on something. I don't do drugs, folks, and don't smoke. So I'm not on anything. But I really look at where we are today as our efforts to try and save public education, the future of public education, is also directly tied to the future of our nation, a nation that is at risk, a nation that's at risk for losing our democracy, for being enslaved by a new neoliberal servitude like slavery was, and like the period after slavery when the country said, okay, we don't, quote, own people outright, but we come up with a different form of ownership and control, do sharecropping in the South to poor control of people and their livelihood in the North. And a good example, and I've used this before, is that our students who accumulate tens of thousands of dollars in debt trying to get a college education, because college education is a gateway to what? A future. Employment. They come out of school, 20,000, 30,000, come out of medical school, law school, $250,000 in debt. That's debt servitude. You're owned, you're controlled by that form of modern day slavery. My message is that teachers, as I mentioned last week, I believe that we are gatekeepers, that we have such power and influence over children, youth, young adults, and that we have allowed, and I know some may get pissed off, we have allowed ourselves via our profession to become agents in the socialization of the nation's children to come out of our educational institutions and take their place as soldiers, as warriors, in the maintenance and perpetuation of a system that will eventually own and control all of us. And that teachers, we are serving the interests, the needs of that neoliberal agenda. I believe we have both the knowledge and the power to break away from that part that we play in this whole scheme and could be leaders in helping save not only public education, but saving our nation, which is not perfect by any means, but also saving humanity and the planet, that we need to become aware and understand our role in today's neoliberal Machiavellian society. And we need, and this is the drum roll part, we need to summon up the courage to say no, the courage to say, I will not be that person to perpetuate, to help maintain and perpetuate a status quo now and in the future via the education, the socialization that I'm participating in terms of creating the next generation, the current and next generation of privatized little minions who will perpetuate the regime that I'm calling the Machiavellian agenda. I believe that as teachers, we need to become not just educators. We need to become scholars. We need to become activists. Those three components, and courage, add courage, that can help not only save public education, but also help make a better world. And I will leave that message with this, something that I raised, I think, year one, or for sure, year two. As teachers, as parents, maybe even grandparents now, would you want to see your children go through, and your grandchildren, your niece, your nephews, your cousins, go through the same agonizing experience that you are putting the nation's children through in terms of the Common Core type curriculum, the scripted curriculum, the turning everyone into widgets and assessing everyone's worth by test scores, the zero tolerance culture, environment, climate, if you want to call it, that exists in your classroom, your school, and the impact that it has and the potential impact it has on students as they go through from pre-K to 12th grade? Do you want to see your own children, grandchildren, go through what you are putting these kids through today? That's a question, that's a challenge. I could go on, but I don't have time, because now I'm down to maybe 11 minutes. At this time, I want to bring Joe Lieb, Deborah Emerson, and if he possibly can free himself, Douglas Newsom, on to close out our last show. But before I do that, I do know that we have a caller, and would love to have that caller who told me that she was going to call in. So I've known about this for a while. Caller, if you're still there, I'd like for you to come on and say hello, say who you are, and why you're calling.
I'm still here listening to your wisdom, as I have for many years. This is Terry Lopez-Preuss. I'm vice president of the Broward Teachers Union and a career educator. And when you were speaking, what came to mind was Harriet Tubman's great quote, "I freed 1,000 slaves. I could have freed 1,000 more if they would have known they were slaves." And I think part of our problem is that we ourselves are unable to spread the message fast enough to others that we are indeed slaves to this system.
Terry has been
a
person, a friend, for almost the length of our 4 years on the show. And for a short period, she was being involved in helping us with the show. And so she is a person that I'm glad, Terry, you called, because you've been here a long time. And you
a long time.
You are that teacher that I've been talking about. That activist, that educator, and that scholar in terms of having the knowledge and the skills to see what's happening and having a platform to make others aware of what's happening. And also what we can do, should do, need to do to save our schools and our democracy. Love the fact that you've been here with us as long as you have. And as I will say to you, I'm not done yet. I'm still going to fight the war.
I'll be watching. I'll be watching to see what else. And let me just add quickly, when one has a platform, one would think that it would be easier to spread the message, but we cannot open the eyes of the blind, and we cannot make those unwilling to listen hear. And that is our charge and our challenge. And I thank you for everything that you've done and every effort that you've made. And I will continue to be with you as you go on helping this cause.
And I thank you for being here all the time that you have. Thank you. Okay. I would like to, Deborah and Joe, and if possible, a little later on, Doug, before we leave, come on and say their farewell. Joe?
Farewells are very hard for me, James, and I don't have anything prepared. I think what I want to say most off is to thank you. Thank you for being the teacher. Thank you. I thank you from all of your listeners, because if we are the teacher, we're also the learner, and we learn for the rest of our lives. And every Sunday, you have taught us, you know, the adult learners out here. You have taught us what reality is. You have taught us what the dream is. You have taught us how to fight. You have taught us how to be strong. And I just want to say thank you. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do with my Thursday nights and my Sunday afternoon evenings anymore. I figured out, I was sitting here thinking, okay, I've probably been with the show of the 225 hours, 175 of them I've been with the show. I sit here and I transcribe your comments. I figured out I probably have over 8,750 comments that I've transcribed of what you've said. It's just been a whole big part of my life, and I thank you. I'm going to miss the show. I'm going to miss our listeners. I have every intention of keeping up the War Report Facebook page. It won't be the same. It'll be something different. And I hope that all of our listeners will be part of whatever it is we're going to be doing going forward. And thank you, James.
Well, thank you, Joe. And I love what you said every time you said we. Joe, as you guys know, because every year when I do the assessment, I talk about Joe and Deborah and Joan Kramer those people who have become family with me, obviously best friends, and that Joe and I, in particular, and I've talked about this, and I've teased her about it, and I've told you guys about it. Over the years, Joe and I have become so close, in addition to, you know, saying that we are family and really meaning that, that I know what she's thinking before she even thinks it, and she knows what I'm thinking. And sometimes it is very scary. We have become that close that, you know, the old expression, joint at the hips, we're past that. Love you, lady. You know that. And
love
the
you
fact
too.
That you always say to me, whatever I want to do, you're doing it with me. And that has meant the world to me. Deborah, are you out there?
I am here.
Say hello to everyone.
I wanted to say thank you to, of course, you, and I wanted to pay tribute to Joan Kramer today, who's been a big part of your life and a big part of the War Report, and also Joe Lieb, as she's been there on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis. And she has done just a tremendous part to be your right hand in all this. And thank you, Terry, for calling in. That was a big surprise, and I'm glad that you called in. And I just want to say, James, I've never met a person more rooted in a crusade in my life. And I call this a crusade, the War Report, because it means to take lead or to take part in an energetic and organized campaign concerning a social or political issue. And I think education has gone political, as you've mentioned. And I was just looking back on the archives, and I saw back in 2015, Mark Nason came on the show talking about the Walmartization of public education. And then you had your Jesse Turner came on. Thank you, Jesse. And also you had your Trojan War series, if you remember that. And you've just brought so much transformation, I think, verbal transformation, and you have perpetuated this vision the last 4 years, and I just want to say thank you, and it's not ended, and I look forward to the next 20 or 30 years with you, because it's going to end, the War Report is ending, but your crusade and your legacy is not going to. So thank you.
Well, you know, and everyone should know, that means so much to me, since you were there at the very beginning, and we have been at this together for the 4 whole years, and the fact that I know whatever I decide to do, going left, going right, I know that once I tell you about it, you're going to say, what do you need me to do?
That's
that has
right.
always been your response.
Both Joe and I will.
Thank you. We have another caller I want to get in for a short period. Are you there, caller?
Hello?
Hello, Celeste?
Hey, James.
Hello? Hi,
lady.
How are you?
I had to call in. I'm fine. Well, I had to call in. James, you, along with Barbara Mandaloni, gave United Opt Out its voice with airtime. You were the first ones that actually had us on, interviewed us, supported the cause, made sure it was known. Forever, we will love you and thank you for that. And I know this next endeavor that you're undertaking is going to be just as wonderful as what you've done with the War Report. We love you and definitely we'll be in touch. We are planning on a UOO conference mid-September in the Massachusetts area. So put that on your radar.
Terrific. My next endeavor will be promoting the Positive Youth Development School model and to try get people to embrace that, understand it, become aware of it, understand it, emotionally engage with it, and be willing to work to bring it about. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. And I'm surprised.
To me, and one of our agenda is the youth engagement.
Okay. You can stay on, sir. But Doug, I'd like for you to come on and say, Doug has been with me from the beginning as well. Of the 200-plus shows, Doug has been there for 200-plus shows.
He's been there from the beginning.
Tremendous...
In fact, he helped us with the title.
Yes. So, Doug, what are your comments?
Well, Dr. Miller, I love you. For your heart, for your compassion, for your deep commitment to doing something most people would not challenge themselves to do, to really get out there, stand up for something, and connect with those people who are trying to do the same thing. That's the most noble of pursuits. I love you deeply for it. We're never going to forget you here, and our doors will always be open to you, and who knows what the future what may bring. We're going to be here for you, Dr. Miller. We love you deeply, and we'll miss you.
Well, thank you. Okay, folks, this is it. I have to say goodbye. There is another song that's going to take us out. I hope Doug can get that in for us. And it, too, gives a message to you from me, okay? And Joe, and Deborah, and for Doug and everyone who's made a contribution to the War Report. Thanks, everyone. I am not going away. I will be back. Arnold said that in The Terminator. I'll be back. Thanks, everyone.
It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.